Good morning. Kendra sent me this poem and asked me to read it. I really love David White's work, but I think she must have known that I needed a reminder, particularly at this time, and you might as well. What to Remember When Waking, by David White. In that first hardly noticed moment in which you wake, coming back to this life from the other more secret, movable, and frighteningly honest world where everything began, there is a small opening into the new day which closes the moment you begin your plans. What you can plan is too small for you to live. What you can live wholeheartedly will make plans enough for the vitality hidden in your sleep. To be human is to become visible while carrying what is hidden as a gift to others. To be human is to become visible while carrying what is hidden as a gift to others. To remember the other world in this world is to live in your true inheritance. You are not a troubled guest on this earth. You are not an accident amidst other accidents. You were invited from another and greater night than the one from which you have just emerged. Now, looking through the slanting light of the morning window toward the mountain presence of everything that can be, what urgency calls you to your one love? What shape waits in the seed of you to grow and spread the branches against a future sky? Is it waiting in the fertile sea, in the trees beyond the house, in the life that you can imagine for yourself, in the open and lovely white page on the waiting desk?
When I was thinking about joy, I kept going back to a line from the yoga studio where I am a member. They got a new webpage a few years ago, and they have these beautiful pictures and these little inspirational phrases on the webpage. And there are three of them in particular that I turn over in my mind all the time. One of them is, to learn without words. And another is, to let myself be how I am. And the third one is to experience the bliss of effort. And each of those is interesting to me, but I noticed when I was in my yoga practice, I often struggled the most with that last one, the bliss of effort. Because mostly, as I was expending the effort of doing my yoga practice, I was thinking, I'm really not very flexible, or I wish I was strong enough to do this down dog for as long as I'm supposed to be doing it, or whatever the commentary for the day might be. But it usually wasn't bliss. It was usually that working hard so that afterwards I would experience some version of joy. And that was reliable, the after-the-effort joy. But it was clear that they wanted me to experience the joy in the midst of the effort. And as close as I have gotten to that at this point is to learn to notice my internal response to effort. Because as I said, it tends to be a fair amount of commentary about whether it's being done properly or whether I can complete it the way it's supposed to be completed or how much longer is this effort going to go on. So I keep my attention on this question of how do I learn to experience bliss in the midst of effort? Because certainly it does happen sometimes spontaneously and sometimes planfully. And then I heard, of course, something on the radio about a psychologist who has been studying this, and you may have read his book about this phenomena of people who do indeed experience bliss in the midst of effort. He called it flow. He has one of those fantastic Hungarian names, which I will pronounce wrong. And his first name can be translated as Michael, so we'll call him Michael. Michael says that it's a cheek scent. Tom, can you help me with this? Cheek scent Mahai? Is that right? Does that sound familiar to you? I don't think it is right. I'll put it in writing for you, and then you too can go and look up his TED Talk or his book about flow. He says that they've studied happiness, and he and a number of other people have reported this, and they say that about 30% of the people in the United States say that they are happy, and that that has been steady for decades, even though personal income has gone up significantly during that time, and all kinds of material changes have happened in our lives. But the level of happiness is the same. So what it looks like is what's happening in the material world around us has only marginal effect on how happy we are. Having enough money for basic comfort and for the needs of living makes a difference in your happiness. And a little bit money, more money after that makes an impact on happiness, but then all the rest seems to have no impact on it. So what is it that brings that happiness if it isn't the material world? And there's a lot of emphasis on how the material world will make you happier. And what this man, who I'm calling Michael, says affects our happiness is our ability to be so deeply and profoundly absorbed in what we are doing that we stop being self-conscious about what we are doing and simply are in the experience of doing. David White calls it being wholehearted. So it isn't really an acquisition of knowledge or technique that brings happiness, but it's a way of being in the world. To be human is to become visible while carrying what is hidden as a gift to others. David White describes this state as one that comes from retaining a connection with a part of our minds that is active when we are asleep, that pre-conscious part of our minds. And there are other ways to access that other way of being. There are other ways to step aside from the watchfulness or self-consciousness or critique of oneself or others. And the man I'm calling Michael calls it flow. He calls it flow because it's what people describe when they're so absorbed in what they're doing that it feels as if it is just flowing out of them without them making it happen, even though they may be expending great effort to do so. He says that when we get into that state of flow, when we have just the right amount of challenge in our lives, not too much, but not nothing either. He says that we can process about 110 bits of information a second. I'm not exactly sure what those bits of information are, but he says that listening to his TED Talk, for instance, requires that one's mind process about 60 bits of information a second, which leaves quite a bit left over. So in this moment, you can pay attention to what I'm saying and doing up here and notice the sun coming out and the birds singing and how it feels to sit where you are sitting and thinking about whatever else is coming up today. He says, however, that that is why you can't listen to two people at the same time, because 60 and 60 exceeds that 110 capacity. And so if two people talk to you at the same time, your brain can't process it and you go, So it doesn't take that much, really, to absorb our full attention. Because two people talking isn't that much information, really. And so it must be possible to teach our minds to fully occupy themselves with whatever we are in the midst of. Possible, but not easy, as you know, any time you have tried to make yourself pay attention to something. But I think that is the work of finding the bliss in effort, of pulling your mind, pulling all of your attention toward what you are doing, rather than what comes next, or what's outside, or what you're carrying around inside. So it starts, I think, with the practice that I've been doing, which is to simply notice how my mind responds to effort, to anticipating effort, and to being in the midst of it. And then to learn when your mind begins to go off in the places that are far away from bliss, to bring it back and invite your mind to pay attention to the sensations of the moment, to what your body knows, instead of having your mind pay no attention to what your body is doing. Attend to that, and then there isn't space left for the other stuff. So the work of finding bliss, I think, is figuring out how to get our mind to pay attention to those 110 bits per second that are in the sensations and realities of the moment. Because that's how much attention we have. And when we put our attention in the moment, then we open ourselves up to losing all of our preoccupations with what isn't. And then finding that we lose our sense of separateness from the work we are in. And that loss of separateness, that finding of connection, is flow, is the bliss of effort, is the beauty of the moment that you are alive in now.